Hi, folks. Welcome to Podcast Paroxysm. Today with me is someone who... It's been a while since we've done this. It's Jared Dubin.
Hey, hey, what's cracking?
It's been far too long.
It has been. You know, I just don't have much podcasting time these days.
So what you're saying is you just don't have time for me these days.
Well, I didn't want to put it like that, but since you were the one that came right out and said it, yeah, I don't have time for you these days.
No, that's fine. I see how it is.
I mean, my thoughts are just consumed with this, you know, Iman Shumpert to the Heat for the 26th pick rumor that Zach Lowe floated today, and it's just going to make me cry.
Cry because it's tears of joy, right? Because Pat Riley is putting together...
How dare you even mention that name on this podcast?
So there's something big coming up Thursday, and we should probably talk a little bit about it.
On Thursday?
Yeah, it's on Thursday.
What's on Thursday?
The draft is on Thursday.
The draft is on Thursday.
The draft is on Thursday.
Don't say.
I'm excited. You're excited. I think everybody's excited.
I'm very excited. I always get way more excited every other year when the Knicks don't have a pick, so I don't have to dread who they take. although you know what, last year Tim Hardaway was on my list of guys I didn't want, and he turned out to be pretty good. So maybe I know a lot less than I like to pretend, and by maybe I mean of course I know a lot less than I like to pretend, which is true of everyone at draft season. But this year I don't really have to worry about it, because it turns out the Knicks can't even really buy a pick because they gave up $1.4 million in the Andrea Bargnani trade. The gift that keeps on taking.
That is lovely. Masai Ujiri is a genius.
Take that, Masai Ujiri.
So we should probably talk about one of the biggest storylines of the draft is the Embiid injury.
It's just heartbreaking, man. It sucks. I feel bad for him. You talk about a big man who has back and foot injuries. That's about as bad as it gets in terms of, you know, pre-draft injuries for a big guy.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Those are the two most concerning injuries a big guy can have, and he's got both.
Yeah, and it's not just like if it was a broken foot, okay, fine. You know, he'll have surgery to repair the broken foot, but it's one of the slowest healing bones in your foot. It's a fracture, and there's a high chance of re-injuring it if, you know, it's just bad news all around. It sucks because this is a guy who is probably going to be...
He was going to be number one. It was, like, almost definite.
Right, yeah.
At least if you believe sources. But then again, with the Cavs, you can't believe sources because their sources are never right.
Right. And now he's dropping, you know, a lot of people say maybe... Sixth to Boston.
Somebody was saying, Bucks co-owner came out today and basically said that they're not picking him.
Yeah, which was a weird strategy for several reasons.
Yeah, I mean, all these teams that want to skip steps and contend right away, like, we talked about this last year in connection with the Pelicans trade. All these teams that try to skip steps, it never works. Just stop trying to skip steps. Just take the guy who's the best fit. You know, if that means he's got us out of here, well, you know, that sucks, but it happens. The Bucks aren't going to be good next year no matter who they take. So it's not like this Embiid thing is a huge deal for them. Of course, you know, okay, maybe they just don't want to take him for any number of other reasons. But to say we need someone who's going to help us right away next year and that's why we're not taking Embiid, I think that that's misguided for a team that's going to be bad either way.
Well, I think it's also, I mean, those are all terrific reasons. But it's also, you know, in this, like, specific time period, you want to be as secretive as possible with, you know, your draft strategy and what your thoughts are. And just to come out, like, right out and say, no, we're probably not going to draft this guy is kind of, you know, it's kind of showing your cards a little bit. Even though they probably weren't going to take him, to come right out and say is a little puzzling. But
it's a little bit strange. How far do you think he drops now?
You know, I still think, I think top eight, I think eighth is his, is the lowest for him.
Him next to Boogie Cousins, that would be such a perfect fit for Boogie.
Oh, yeah, that'd be nice.
I feel like he won't get past both the Celtics and Lakers. I have no basis for saying that, but I feel like they both have, like, magical fairy dust, and if they draft him, he'll never be injured again.
I'm not sure about that with the Lakers. I want Adam Silver to intervene and make it a rule that now Embiid can only go to the Suns or the Spurs. Because those
are
the only
two. I said the other day that I think the best case scenario would be the Suns packaging their picks, moving up, and saving his career with their Warlock training staff.
That's what I'm saying. Those are the only two training staffs I trust to rehabilitate him and give him a long career. So I really think Silver needs to make that a thing. This is what you're commissioner for, Adam. Do this.
Well, I think that that's more of a David Stern move than the draft. I don't know if Silver wants to get off on that foot. Speaking of Silver, though, okay, so every year, David Stern would get booed at the draft, and Adam Silver would get cheered. You know, I doubt that they're going to transfer the booing from Stern to Silver because he has, like, a universally high approval rating right now. So do you think that Mark Tatum is just going to get booed because you need to boo somebody at the draft? I feel like it could happen just for pure comedy purposes, but then you think about it, he's the first black deputy commissioner, and it's a bad look to be booing like the newly in charge black guy. So I think that he should get cheered. Plus, he's like well respected around the league, but around the league is not necessarily the fans at the Barclays Center, and nobody outside of league circles knows who he is all that much. I feel like this is a really important storyline that nobody is discussing yet. We need to know who people are going to boo and who people are going to cheer at the draft. And it hasn't gotten enough attention. And we're just the guys to talk about it because it doesn't matter. So we should really discuss it.
Absolutely. Here's what I think happens. I think Silver gets cheered because there's no reason to boo him yet. That'll probably change after the next lockout, or after he changes the.
Well, it's funny. During the last lockout, he was Stern's heavy. Like, he was the guy coming out and spewing all of the owner speak.
I know, and that's why it really puzzled me. Where everybody was so excited about like Silver being more open, and you know the players are more eager to negotiate with him.
It's like, well, I think it was privately he was more of a forward-thinking type. But, you know, because he had to play the heavy for Stern in the lockout, some fans got a different opinion of him. But now that he took over to such fanfare and handled the Sterling thing so well, he has, like, probably the best approval rating of any commissioner in any sport ever.
Well, I think that's true. I also think that's not the hardest thing in the world to do.
Yeah, there's not much competition.
No, there's really not. Like, even if he had a 40% approval rating, that'd still be probably 30% higher than the next highest person.
Right. Like, Bud Selig has had a 4% approval rating for years, and somehow Gary Bettman's is lower.
It's ridiculous.
And everyone hates Roger Goodell. Might have a 0% approval rating.
Right. I think Silver gets cheered. I think we still get our fair share of sexy Silver chants.
If the sexy Silver chant goes away, I'm going to be so disappointed.
I don't think it does.
That was more of a Madison Square Garden thing, and now the draft is at Barclays, so it might not be there.
Nah, I think it's going to be there.
I mean, I hope it's still there.
I think
what they want right now, sexy Silver discussions, booing discussions. This is just what everyone wants to talk about the draft.
Well, yeah, we're not going to talk about players. Why would we do that? And then I think the commissioner, I don't think he gets cheered. I think he just kind of, like, people clap politely because they don't know him.
He has to develop a personality for himself.
Exactly.
He will get, like, a Tawdry Tatum chant. I highly doubt it, but it would be funny.
I'm a little disappointed, or at least I'm going to be a little sad. Stern was just at his best
And
last year.
last year during the draft, he was just loving it.
Oh, yeah. I
When
mean,
he came out for that last pick of the first round, it was just incredible theater.
he was waving on the crowd, asking for boos, like
He was just
trolling
an
them.
all-time great troll. He really was.
He was, we're gonna miss you, Stern. We're not that much.
Not that much,
But
but
we're gonna miss you.
at the draft, we will definitely miss him.
Yes, absolutely.
Anyway, let's get back to actual draft picks and players and teams and whatnot.
You mean the boring stuff?
Yes, the boring, non-important stuff that nobody cares about. Unlike the boos and the sexy silvers, nobody actually wants to hear about Joel Embiid and Andrew Wiggins. So the Cavs have the number one pick again. Seems like we're talking about them with the number one every year. Let's go with who would you take if you were the Cavs, rather than who you think they're going to take.
I mean, to me right now, it's pretty much a no-brainer. You go with Wiggins, you go with the guy who's going to immediately impact your defense positively, and the guy who could be, I mean, a superstar talent a few years down the road. Obviously, it all depends on development, but I really don't think it's that close of a competition right now.
Well, I want to touch on a point you talked about there. I've seen a whole lot in the last, the lead up to the draft, that Parker is the more NBA-ready prospect than Wiggins. Here's my, not really a beef with that, but I have a question relating to that. Everyone says Parker's more ready because, his offensive game is more ready. But if Wiggins' defensive game is more ready, how does that make him any less ready? Like, why is defense considered a less NBA-ready skill than offense? A lot of coaches will sit rookies down and not play them as much because they're not ready to contribute defensively. And if we accept that, Parker's offensively ready and Wiggins is defensively ready, which a lot of people seem to accept right now, then why is Wiggins any less ready to contribute? Especially because a coach is more likely to sit Parker because he can't contribute on defense. I just don't understand the dichotomy here where a guy whose offense is ready is considered more NBA ready than a guy whose defense is ready. Like, why does that happen? I don't get it.
I think it just happens because offense is more aesthetically appealing. Like, I think that's the only reason why. I completely agree with you. I think, I don't know if one's more ready than the other when you look at, like, in terms of what they're going to bring on offense and on defense. It's almost like they negate each other.
Right. And this isn't to say that Wiggins can't contribute on offense or Parker can't contribute on defense.
Right,
It's
no.
just those are the common narratives. And I just wonder why the guy who has a more well-rounded offensive game right now is considered more ready than the guy who seems like he can guard two or three positions, at least one-on-one, almost immediately. Obviously team defense takes a while for every rookie to learn, almost every rookie. Some guys come in ready to do it right away. But it just doesn't make sense to me why offense is considered more ready than defense. That's where I'm coming from on that. And that's why I agree that I think they should take Wiggins. Parker, okay, he can step in and score right away. They already have guys who can score there. They have absolutely nobody who can defend anyone on the perimeter, and that's been true pretty much since LeBron left. Why not take the guy who can step in, get out in transition and score that way, score on cuts and things like that? Maybe he's not someone who can create for himself off the dribble, but he has Kyrie Irving around to create off the dribble for him, and he has Dion Waiters around to create off the dribble for him. I think that if you take a guy who can step in and defend the toughest perimeter scorer on the other team, get out in transition, use his athleticism to get points, maybe he's not ready for high usage scoring right away, but it allows him to develop that over the course of the next few years while he contributes in other areas that I don't think Parker can just yet.
I don't disagree with you one bit.
Well,
I'm
that's
also very high.
Why don't you disagree with me?
I know, it's weird. I feel like the internet should break right now because we agree on something. But, I mean, it also comes to the fact that I'm not that high on Parker and I'm very high on Wiggins. But I mean, it's exactly what you said. The Cavs don't have anybody who's going to defend the perimeter, so get the guy who's going to be able to defend multiple positions on the perimeter. It seems like a no-brainer, but this is the Cavs. And they haven't exactly gone with the no-brainers or the safe picks or really, you know, anything that anybody could predict in the past few drafts except for Kyrie Irving. So instead of what do you think they should do, I'm going to ask you to do the impossible. What do you think they will do?
I think they're going to take Parker.
Yeah, I kind of think so too.
There's all the stuff about, you know, the more NBA-ready prospect. And I think that Dan Gilbert has been so hell-bent on making the playoffs immediately, and I think that that's why the NBA-ready stuff picks up steam for them, and that's who they're going to take. And I think the Duke thing with him and Kyrie, I mean, I don't think that that should weigh in, or even necessarily that it does weigh in, but it seems like a narrative thing that might contribute.
Yeah, I don't know if I lend much credence to that last point, but I do agree. I can see them taking the better score over the better defender and the guy who's maybe not as refined right now. Then again, I could also see them doing just something absolutely wild. I could see them maybe taking Exum number one, or, you know, just completely going with the smokescreen and actually selecting Embiid number one.
I suppose that anything is possible with that team.
It is the Cavs.
I wouldn't put anything past them, is basically what I'm saying.
Right. So then we're not going to do an entire mock draft, but I think it's important to talk about, you know, the top three or four. And then, you know, the Bucks are in an interesting position. They're in a great position too, because it's, you know, whoever Cleveland doesn't take, they should take.
Right, especially since, you know, they've already said they're not taking Embiid. So if Cleveland takes Parker, they take Wiggins. If Cleveland takes Wiggins, they take Parker.
Do you think maybe Exum enters into the equation?
I don't know. I haven't heard him connected to them at all. But that would make for an extremely athletic and long-armed perimeter duo with him and Giannis.
I think,
and then
they're,
when you add in Henson too, they would have so many long-armed guys, it would be absurd.
Their perimeter defensive scheme would just be Red Rover.
Yes, it would.
I mean, I like it. I think, you know, I think I'd be intrigued by Exum on the Bucks. I don't think it happens. I don't know, like, how enamored they are with him. I don't know.
I don't think he winds up going before Wiggins or Parker.
I don't think so either, but I think there's always a chance, which, I mean, obviously is stating the obvious. But, you know, a guy like that who everybody's been kind of clamoring over for the past year, year and a half, a guy who definitely projects, I think, as a better long-term point guard than Brandon Knight, you know, it's maybe something worth looking at.
And we've talked about this before. Brandon Knight makes more sense off the ball.
Yeah.
I think. Not necessarily full-time off the ball, but just let somebody else work in the backcourt with him handling the ball. I think that would be good for him.
Or even if you bring him off the bench and have him be your, you know, your sixth man.
Yeah, that's sort of like a Jamal Crawford type.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be good for him too.
Right.
We need to stop agreeing, by the way.
I know. We should probably, like, agree offline to disagree on things and then yell at each other. That might be
right,
best.
Right. So let's go this way then, because I have a feeling we'll have a different opinion on this. If Wiggins had gone somewhere other than Kansas, I feel like we would be thinking about him differently as a prospect. I think that Kansas sort of constrained his offensive development a bit. And this has happened with other Kansas prospects too.
Jared, you kind of need to stop right now because I'm going to agree with you on this too.
Okay, so let's move on. If Wiggins had gone to UNC or Duke or even Florida, well, actually, no. If he had went to Florida State, he would have fallen out of the first round.
Right.
Because, well, we all know why I think that.
Yes,
we all know. But yeah, I think that we would be thinking about it differently had he gone to a different school. So let's move on to Jordan. which non-lottery prospect is sort of, you know, your guy that you think is going to be really
good? Oh, man. I should have this answer, like, at the ready, and I just don't. You know, I don't know if there is just one guy. I think for me, it's more there are a lot of prospects I like, and I just want them to fall into the right system.
So let's go with which are a couple prospects that you like and the right system that you think that they should go to.
Okay, so like Cle'Anthony Early, Wichita State guy. I'd love to see him, you know, like on the Suns. I think that'd be such a great fit for him. Even if he lasts a little bit longer than people think and he gets scooped up in the late first round by the Jazz, I also think that could be a really good fit. The Hawks, too, I think could be interesting. And then there's Kyle Anderson, whose skill set I really like. It's just you've got to be okay with him not being a good athlete and using him, even if you have a team of athletes, using him to kind of augment their athleticism while mitigating his lack of it. So obviously he'd be perfect on the Spurs, but then again, who wouldn't? Again, the Suns, I think it'd be really interesting to see him there. Yeah, so those are my two guys who I really like and who I really want to see in the right position.
Yeah, I think my, you know, number one mid to late prospect and team fit is Adrian Payne and the Bulls.
Oh, yeah.
I think that just makes so much sense. And I was talking to Brian about it the other day, and he agrees, and he thinks that that's exactly why it won't happen. Brian's a Bulls fan, and he's sort of as fatalistic about the Bulls as I somewhat am about the Knicks. I think that just makes so much sense. He's a strong rebounder, good, like, stretch four type who can, you know, stretch the floor. But I think that if they don't wind up making a move for either Melo or Love, that would be a really good fit as a guy that can be Taj Gibson's backup after they amnesty Carlos Boozer.
And I agree with that. I like Adrian Payne a lot. I think the more the reason I didn't really go to him is because I think a lot of people like him. He's a pretty well-known name.
And I know that you love him going too. Before the Bulls.
Yeah. Yeah. Who are some guys you're not that high on who you think are getting a bit too much love or just like are rising a bit too high?
Okay, so there's one guy I've never seen him play, so it's not that I don't like him. I'm just skeptical of the guy who's a late rising prospect because of workouts, and that's Elfrid Payton.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the draft process, he was going in like the mid to late 20s, and now all of a sudden he's rising up into the top 10 because of workouts. And I'm just always skeptical of that. Doesn't make sense to me when guys rise like that. And that brings me to someone who's the opposite has happened. And I'm usually skeptical of Syracuse guys, but Tyler Ennis is, for some reason, moving down draft boards due to workouts. He was a guy who was considered a borderline top 10 or lottery pick at the beginning of the draft process, and now all of a sudden he's moving down draft boards because of workouts. That I'm always skeptical of those things in either direction. So I feel like he's going to wind up being better value than some guys who will get picked before him because he's not having good workouts.
I like Peyton. I do agree. I know Chad Ford had him at 8 in the latest ESPN mock draft, which I do think is high. But I can see him rising as he has, maybe not as high as he has, but I can see him rising from, you know, the late 20s to the mid-teens. His shooting is a concern, but people love his defense, you know, and all those intangibles that he supposedly carries. And then, you know, Enos, I think, is an interesting case. He was out here working out for the Nuggets, and so I got to see a little bit of him. He struggled against James Young and Zach LaVine when they were doing one-on-one drills. He shot the ball really well, especially from deep, but his release is very, very slow. It's methodical. It takes about like a second to a second and a half, maybe a little bit more, to get off, which doesn't sound like a long time. But when you put it in the context of an NBA game, it's like, yeah, it's almost a windup, and it's going to be easily blocked. That being said, if he drops out of, you know, the lottery, if he drops to, like, 15, I think someone who gets into 15 is going to get great value, and I'd be surprised to see him drop that far.
So who's a guy that you're sort of skeptical of?
I've always been skeptical of Marcus Smart. It's like, I know he's a good defender, I know he has great size. I'm just wary of point guards who aren't real point guards. Like, he's not a good passer. And also of gunners who can't shoot. That's what really worries me. And so I've just never been that high on him as an overall prospect. I think if you get him in the teens, that's fine. I just, you know, top 8, top, you know, 6 pick, I don't think I take him there. And I could be wrong.
Well, what would you say to someone who responded to those concerns with, yeah, but he can get to the basket kind of whenever he wants?
Yeah, okay, I get that. But then how able will he be to adjust if he's already not a good passer? So if someone just keeps clogging the lane, or if someone backs off him and just dares him to shoot, and he will shoot because he's done that, but he can't shoot. Like, I get that there are positives for him. I'm not saying the guy's a completely worthless player and that he, like, there aren't areas he's good at. It's just the things that he's supposed to be good at, I guess, for his position, or the things that he thinks he's good at and actually isn't, like, that's troubling to me. Now, if he's a really coachable player, and by all reports, he is. Okay.
But Jordan, he attacked a fan during a game. He is a horrible person.
Oh my God. That was one of like the worst things that could have happened. I mean, not just because he shoved the guy. It's like, yeah, okay, he made a mistake. Guess what? He's young. But also, like, yeah, like massive switch because of those 15 seconds. Like, no, like the fan was also a jerk. Like, you think he really would have gone in and just randomly shoved a guy because he's just cuz? Like, no. Like, Marcus
Smart. Right, this isn't Ron Artest we're talking about.
No, no. You read all about Marcus Smart and you read that he's a good kid. So, one incident versus all these other reports, I'm not going to, you know, bash the guy because of that. Right. And then I'm always trying to. Oh, yeah. Zach LaVine is another guy. Like, I like him. I just. Again, that's another thing with fit. If a team drafts him and immediately tries to play him at point, instead of easing him along slowly and letting him play both on and off the ball, I don't know how well he'd do if versus like him being kind of groomed slowly.
See, okay, I'm glad we have a place to disagree.
Good.
I love Zach LaVine.
Yeah,
I'm a huge fan. I think that if the Magic go big with their first pick at 4, and then Nick Stauskas isn't there, I love Zach LaVine for them at 12. I think him and Oladipo in the backcourt sort of sharing, you know, the point guard and shooting guard responsibilities, and each being able to defend both positions, I think would be really interesting. you know, they'd have a little bit of, you know, maybe shooting problems in the backcourt, but I think you can make up for that somewhat with just hyper athleticism. So I kind of like that.
Okay, but even here I'm agreeing with you. It's like I was saying, like if someone just gives him the reins right away, I don't know about that, but that was, like I was saying, someone, if he goes to a team where he can share responsibility, play both on and off the ball, and isn't shoehorned into one position, but is allowed to learn both, or like even if it's just like goes positionless, as it were, then yeah. And, you know, I saw him, he was here with the Nuggets. He was on fire from the corners. He could not miss from the corner three. From up top, he struggled a little bit, but that's, I mean, that's a strength thing. It's also an altitude thing. Because, like, you know, it's harder to shoot when you're a lot more tired than you usually would be. But no, I like Levine. I think he's good. I think he'll be really good.
I thought we were trying to disagree.
I know. Wait.
Wait, okay, so I think I have one where you disagree.
Okay, good, good, good.
You really like TJ Warren, right?
It just so happens that I pick him in every, like, mock draft. In all honesty, I don't know that much about him. I haven't watched that much film of him. I know he's a crafty scorer. I know he'll struggle defensively, but you know what? I've kind of been pulling it out of my ass somewhat when it comes to talking about TJ Warren.
See, I watched him play Miami. Mm-hmm. Too much, and I'm out.
You don't like him?
Nope. I'm not seeing it. I know he can score, but I just feel like he's one of those guys that likes to go it alone to get his points too much and sort of gets not necessarily into his own head that he's better than he is. Actually, exactly that. I think he thinks he's better than he is and tries to do everything himself, which I'm not into as a thing that you should be doing.
Right. What are your thoughts on this year's Euro class?
The only one I've seen actually play is Exum, who I really like a lot.
Okay, I was talking more about the other guys.
Well, Saric today, Chad Ford broke that he signed a 3-year deal in Europe and basically can't come to the NBA for 2 years now, which I think throws a whole monkey wrench into the late lottery.
Yeah. I mean, unless the team's willing to wait on him, if they're like, you know what, yeah, we're not in a win-now mode. But it was interesting. There was a report that the Nuggets had given him a promise, but... No, they're not. I don't think they want to wait on it. I honestly don't even think they're keeping the pick in this draft. And so now I don't know if they're going to. If they did give him that promise, I just don't know if they draft him because they are in a win now mode. They're in a make the playoffs mode. So if they're going to draft a guy, they want a guy who's going to be able to contribute immediately and not 2 years down the road.
I could contribute immediately.
Yes, you could, Jared.
I think I should have put my name into the draft.
Why didn't you?
I'm not very good at basketball anymore.
Oh, okay, right. Do you think your knees would have raised some red flags?
I think so, yes. This guy has no cartilage left with me. I would have had a DeJuan Blair-like draft stock drop.
Yeah, but then you could have made it to the Spurs and, you know, piled around with Popovich and for a few years.
And then haunted them in the playoffs.
And then haunted them in the playoffs.
And kicked someone in the face. Except for the whole kicking in the face thing. I wouldn't have done that.
No, of course not. You're a class act, Jared.
Yeah.
Should we talk second rounders?
Sure. Although let's talk about one guy who's moving up draft boards to first before we get there.
Okay.
Shabazz Napier. Like I said, I'm always skeptical of the late riser in the draft process, but I am even more skeptical of the had a great NCAA tournament run and is considered a great leader draft process riser.
Well, I think it's also because of his workouts. He's done really well in his workouts.
And that's what we call the Johnny Flynn.
Well, let's not get carried away there.
No, I'm not saying that he's exactly like Johnny Flynn. I'm saying that type of rise is called the Johnny Flynn because it's really dumb. This guy has a great tournament run and his team was really good. Does not mean that he has some magical winning powers.
Well, one, that, you can't prove, just gonna... you can't prove he doesn't, first off.
Right. Can't prove that he doesn't.
And then, you know, he was even rising even a little bit before that. I mean, he'd always been kind of, I think, a early to mid second rounder. But, you know, as much as, like, we don't like it, like, yeah, a deep run in the tournament does affect your draft status positively. And I honestly think it should a little bit. I don't think it should raise you from, let's say you're like a late first rounder to mid lottery. Like that, I don't think. But I do think people should put stock in the fact that this guy was able to lead his team through gauntlet, like, and to a championship. I do think that's worth something. You don't think it's worth anything at all that he was able to do that? That he was the best player on the national championship team?
I disagree that he was able to do that as if it was by himself.
I'm not saying it was by himself, but I'm saying he was the best player on the team. And even though, like, the NCAA tournament, usually you win it if you have good guards. Like, that's it. But you don't think it's worth anything at all that he, like, was an integral part of UConn's run through the tournament?
Yeah, yes, but I think it's worth... I just think his performance in the regular season, which was very good, like, let's throw that out there, he was very good throughout the whole season, should matter way more than a five-game run through the tournament. Like, why does the five-game run hold more weight than what he did during the season? No, if he was considered a late first, early second-round prospect before the tournament, why should five games sway him all the way up into the middle of the first round? That doesn't make sense to me.
I'm not saying that those five games should be weighted more than the others. It's more to me that those five games should be almost like an additional thing. They should be considered in a separate context and more as of like another positive and not just like this is a better indication of the guy's talent than, you know, this much bigger sample size.
I just don't think they should matter more than any other games.
And I'm not saying they should matter more. I'm just saying
whatever it was, 38, 39 games last year, I think you should consider the whole rather than he did this in the regular season and then he did this and led his team to the championship in the tournament.
I think it should be
he played these 39 games and he was quite good and also his team won the tournament.
But that's what I'm saying. I agree with you. And that's what I think. And his team won the tournament and he did this here. I don't think it should be weighted more than the previous games, but I do think it's something worth consideration.
I just don't think it should be extra. Like, you shouldn't get extra credit for your team being good.
Right.
That's where I'm at.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you there.
I thought we disagreed on something.
I know, we were so close. So let's see. Some second rounders. This might be a good question. Is there any, and we've kind of touched on this, but is there any guy who you're surprised has crept into the first who you think probably should go back down to the second?
Not really. I think it's more the other way. Like Mitch McGarry looks like he might fall into the second round. And this is a guy who, if he wasn't hurt and didn't smoke pot, would be like a top 10 type pick. I think he's going to be really good value for whoever gets him.
I agree. If he had left last year, which he should have, then yeah, we're not even talking about this because he goes at worst late lottery.
Right, he's like he has two skills that translate really well to the NBA, rebounding and interior defense.
And passing. Don't forget he's a really good passer.
He is a good passer. But I think that those particular skills translate very well. And, I mean, I get the worries about his back. I don't get the worries about him smoking pot.
I don't think that's a worry.
He was a college kid. It's not a character concern that he smoked some pot.
Yeah, and that he was banned for a year, like, okay, he was banned for a year, but look at what the crime was, which doesn't fit the punishment at all, which it's the NCAA. What does?
Right.
So I agree. I do agree with that. Like, a guy who's creeping up, I think, a little bit higher than he should, and this may be a little bit of bias for me, is Jordan Clarkson from Missouri. I think he's a fine prospect, but he's rising a little fast. And I mean, I saw him play when he was at Tulsa. And he had people are projecting him as a, you know, guy who can play both on and off the ball, but he has a tendency to get tunnel vision. And I just don't know. I'm not that high on him. If you get him like with like the 30th pick or the 29th pick, okay. But I think you're getting, I don't know about better value, but I think you're just better off getting him in the second round.
Well, second round pick is better value than late first round picks almost no matter what, because of, you know, the non-guaranteed nature of the contracts.
Right.
What do you think about Rodney Hood?
You know, I'm not a fan. Like, I like his shooting.
Oh, good. We can disagree again. I love Rodney Hood, and I hate Duke players.
I like his shooting. I think if he goes to a team that needs a shooting specialist but can hide his defense because he is not a good defender, then good. But I just don't buy him that much. I'm not high on him.
I think when guys have an NBA skill, they're almost always going to be contributors in at least some manner. And he is an NBA level 3-point shooter. And I feel like that makes him a somewhat safe pick. At the worst, he's going to be a guy you can bring off the bench to get spacing. And, you know, not necessarily generate his own offense, but help your team generate offense and also be able to knock down shots off of kickouts, whether from the post or on pick and rolls or whatever.
And I don't really, I think again, our disagreement here is just about degrees to which, you know, we think this guy is going to, like, what level he's going to achieve. I agree that his 3-point shooting is obviously going to be an asset, and it is an NBA skill. And so, again, if he goes to a team that needs that specialist, he'll have a fine career. I'm just not buying him as anything higher than a guy who's instant offense. I'm not buying him as, like, you know, a sixth man. I'm buying him as a seventh or an eighth man, a specialist. Sure.
Is there really that much of a difference there?
Like, yeah, I think so. I'm talking, when I say sixth man, I mean like a Manu sixth man or Jamal Crawford sixth man, a guy who's not just a specialist, but you bring him off the bench to do a lot more than just shoot or just score or just defend.
You don't bring Jamal Crawford off the bench to just score?
No. I mean, you can run offense through him, not well all the time, as we saw in Game 5. But, I mean, you're not bringing him out there just to score, I think.
Oh, I think that's like exactly what he is.
I mean, that's his primary objective, but he can do other things too. Rodney Hood, I don't think can do... Like, when I think Rodney Hood, I'm trying to think... Like, Ime Udoka. That's Rodney Hood.
Oof. Man.
That was a little harsh. That was a little harsh.
You really are not high on Rodney Hood.
Wow, that was a little harsh.
Yeah, I gotta say, I disagree on that. I'm trying
maybe
to think
less
of
athletic Martell Webster?
I think Webster, period, would just be a decent... I mean, I'm not one... I'm not very good at comps. But, yeah, I mean, I guess Webster... Or I don't know. I can't come up with a good comp. I think he's a good shooter off the bench with the potential to be a good shooter as a starter.
Okay.
But either way, he's a good shooter, and I think that other than the ability to guard multiple positions, shooting might be the most valuable skill in the league right now.
Yeah, I agree with that, especially how valuable space is now.
I meant for a wing player in specific.
Okay, well, I just think kind of almost overall. Well, I don't know about that. Is there anything else we can disagree on, like really disagree on? Because we've failed pretty spectacularly so far.
Yeah, I mean, okay, let's talk about who do you think is going to be most active trade-wise on draft night?
Oh, I like this. This is just me coming from where I'm from, or not where I'm from, but where I'm living. Denver, I think, is going to be very active because I don't think they like many of the players in this draft enough to pick them when they want to get a veteran, which, you know, I don't like that move, but okay. I think we're going to see the Bulls be very active, and Bulls, Suns, and I think we're going to see something from Team Hennigan.
Henny?
Yeah. I think something's coming from Henny.
Well, I think almost by necessity, the Sixers have to be active.
Yeah, but that kind of like goes without saying.
They have 5 second-round picks, and they just can't roster all of them. Like, they have to sell or trade a couple.
Right. Hey, do you realize you get to use your favorite, can we call it a limerick? I don't know, your favorite rhyme on Thursday?
Hinkery dinkery dock, the Sixers are on the clock.
Yeah, it's finally.
It's been too long.
It's been too long. Who do you think is going to be the most active, besides, obviously, the Hinkies?
The Hinkies, obviously, like you said. I also think the Bulls are going to be active. I would agree on that front. It sounds like the Thunder are going to at least try to be active, which I think makes sense. So those would be a couple. I'm trying to think who else.
Do you think the Pelicans? There have been some rumblings about the Pelicans trying to get back into the first round.
Right. Well, I think everyone who doesn't have a first round pick is trying to get back in.
Right. But the reports have been especially indicative of the Pelicans. I don't know who on that roster. Like, unless you're trading, like, no one's going to take Tyreek for a first round. I just don't see how they're going to be able to get into the first round with any of their current players, unless you give up Drew Holiday, who you just kind of mortgaged your future to get.
Yeah. Maybe they can buy a pick with some of Ted Benson's money.
They could do that.
Although, you know, first round picks have been getting more expensive over the last few years. And this year obviously is considered one of the better drafts in a while, so it might not even be enough $3 million to buy a pick.
Right. Well, I think we've covered mostly everything. I mean, beside the second round, but I think the second round is really just the Sixers round at this point.
Although, you know, maybe they want to give one of those picks to the Knicks. just give it to us. We want it. Just give it. Give it to us.
And now I'm just picturing Hinkie like dangling some form, like just like a piece of paper that says second round pick in front of James Dolan, and Dolan just keeps trying to like jump up and get it like a dog, and he's like, wait for it.
Well, no, James Dolan doesn't care about picks, so it's more he's dangling in front of the Knicks fan base and we're trying to like jump up and snag it.
It's just a collective pack of fans, and he's just like, wait for it.
Yeah. I do think that we've covered.
Okay, so before we go, though, we each have to make one in the spirit of, you know, #analysis, making one bold prediction for the draft.
the Knicks managed to get themselves a pick.
A first round pick?
Yes.
Okay.
It's bold.
My prediction is Dante Exum goes second.
That is also bold.
Well, I think
we've satisfied the requirement for bold predictions.
Yeah, yeah, we did a good job there.
Doesn't get any bolder than that.
All right, well, this was fun. We need to do it again sometime because, you know, yes. It's just not the same without you, Jared.
Well, of course it's not.
Of course it's not.
I think that's obvious.
All right, I'm Jordan White at Jordan S. White. He's Jared Dubin at JADubin5. And we'll see you next time, folks. Thanks.